After Alex had turned on the camera light, a panic wave went through the flock. He saw a long, dark hall full of de-beaked, derailed hens in tiny cages, cackling and screaming. A sudden coldness hit him at the core, and he took a step back. It was like a scene from a utopian horror movie.
My name is Henrik Vilenius, and I'm the author of the Rise Up trilogy, a young adult coming-of-age story about Hashim, Alex, and Mariam confronting real-life issues like climate change, corrupt politics, animal cruelty, and racial and gender equity.
Ten. Ramon heard the traffic nearby, but he wasn't sure from which direction. At times, he thought he was back home, because of the type of fir trees that surrounded him. Their measly size resembled the ones near his house in the mountains of northwestern Guatemala. The high fever had made him very weak and given him hallucinations with flashbacks to his childhood. His little brother had died at a young age, when the family worked in a finca on the coast. And many of his cousins had been killed during the U.S.-backed counterinsurgency operations in the 80s. In fact, it had amounted to genocide, where over 11,000 ethnic Guatemalans had lost their lives. However, there were good memories too. Such as when he had gone with his father to the mountains to collect herbs that his father would then sell in the capital. During those trips, his father had told him old stories passed from generation to generation about the history of his people. Nevertheless, he was surprised that he was still alive and not caught. After his escape, he was sure the guards would find him. Maybe the dogs couldn't follow his scent after the early evening showers. He knew he couldn't be more than a couple of miles away from the farm, because he had to take breaks all the time. There was not much time left. He had to get to a hospital, although he knew that his chances of surviving bird flu were low. He didn't want his compatriot to have died in vain. Ramon believed that the brutal cover-up in the egg farm was a manifestation of an eternal struggle between good and evil gods over the destiny of man, and it was his duty to help the good ones win. Also, he wanted his family to know what had happened to him and his compatriot in order for them to perform the rituals to ensure a safe journey to heaven. Ramon got up on his wobbly legs. Leaning on a stick he had found the previous day, he limped onward. After 20 minutes of laborious effort, he came out of the woods and reached the country road. As a pickup truck arrived from the east, he stumbled to the ground and lost his consciousness. As it passed him, the pickup truck slowed down and then stopped 30 feet from him. Alex put down his phone and gazed out of the window at a country club, nestled between woodlands alongside the Long Island Expressway. When Miriam had proposed a visit to a farm sanctuary, he had been happy to accept it. It had been on his bucket list for some time now, but somehow, he had never gotten around to actually doing it. Miriam had been right. He had been cooped up in his attic room way too long, but he loved doing research online to learn new things. And his latest find made his blood boil. "Have you guys ever heard about ag-gag laws?" Alex asked. When nobody said anything, although he was sure that Miriam knew about it, he continued. "It's an anti-whistleblower law. Basically, it means that I would commit a crime if I made my video public." Hashim's mouth fell open.
"Wait, really?"
"Yeah, so much for freedom of speech, right? Or for workers' rights and workplace safety," Miriam said from the driver's seat. "The factory farms like to hire undocumented immigrants who don't dare to go to the authorities to report animal abuse or safety violations. Now they make it illegal too. Working there is already the most dangerous job in the country."
"Yeah, they treat their workers like shit. Not much better than the animals,"
Alex added. He had learned about the exploitation of undocumented immigrants from his social activist mother. The U.S. effort to fight communism had destabilized Central America in the 1980s. Crime, poverty, corrupt government, and high inequality made it impossible for an average person to lead a normal life. At least up north, they could make a decent living and send money to their families back home. According to his mother, the native Indian people from Central America were an easy target for exploitation. They had to pay recruitment fees to the labor contractors that could amount to several thousand dollars. They seldom knew their own rights and had difficulty expressing themselves in Spanish or English. The ethnic Mesoamericans even had trouble understanding each other because they could only comprehend the language spoken in their own area, while all the different sub-tribes had their own distinctive dialects.
Low wages, no health insurance, Alex continued. If they get sick, they're on their own and risk losing their jobs.
It's slavery, Miriam cut in. And if they're serious trouble, they just fire them or ship them away. And that's why it's so easy for Mary Farm to cover their tracks. Nobody knows that these poor guys we saw yesterday were even there in the first place.
Except us, Hashim said from the back seat. Except us, Alex repeated and pushed his shoulders back.
Miriam inhaled the fresh country air as she gaped at hills surrounding the farm. It was hard to believe that they were less than an hour's drive from the city. The sanctuary looked like one of those pop-and-mom farms with wooden barn, sloping meadows, and free-grazing animals she had seen in the old movies. These were the images many of the meat producers used in their marketing material. Unfortunately, nothing could be further from the truth. Farms like this didn't exist anymore. 99% of farm animals in the United States lived in factory farms. After taking a deep breath, Miriam screwed her face and covered her nose.
Ah, it's this one here who stinks,
their guide Elaine said as she petted a goat with stiff hind legs.
Ugh, do they all stink like that?
Hashim asked and inhaled through his mouth. Elaine chuckled as she ran her fingers through the goat's fur.
Only the buck stinks, and Cookie is a buck. He hasn't been neutered yet. Poor thing. He fell off a truck, and we found him on the side of the road, unable to move.
It was the first time Miriam saw a live goat. In her youth, she had seen many of them dead at the dinner table during celebrations and family dinners. The most popular milk in the world came from goats. And raising them for dairy was the most rapidly growing segment in the meat industry in the U.S. Miriam knew some people thought that its milk was more humanely produced and healthy, but they were just marketing gimmicks. There was no scientific evidence to prove these claims, besides a few industry finance researches by sold-out scientists. Bracing herself, Miriam moved closer and let the goat press his snout against her leg. Although the stench was almost overpowering, she reached out to touch his fur, which was surprisingly soft.
It's her first day out in the pasture. Those legs took several months to heal.
Suddenly, Cookie straightened up as if an electric current had gone through his body and broke into a run across the field and back.
Go, Cookie, go,
Elaine said and laughed. Miriam's eyes were watering up. So seldom she had seen such an unbridled joy in another sentient being. Knowing how Cookie's emotions were as real as her own, she felt deeply connected to this stinky little animal who was celebrating the miracle of life. Alex saw a flock of hens come rushing around the barn, murmuring as if they were debating how to take over the entire farm. Soon they stopped by an invisible sign and started picking up seeds only 10 feet away from them. A mother hen was giving out tuck-tuck-tucking sounds like a rooster to alert her chick. Then she started snatching tasty tidbits from the ground, and soon her offspring got the gist and followed her example.
Betsy!
Elaine called out. A little white D-beaked hen broke through the other hens and headed straight towards them. Elaine scooped her off the ground and kissed her face over her closed eyes. While Elaine was holding Betsy, another hen, a larger one, was vying for her attention. Alex gasped as Betsy uttered a very peculiar sound again and again. First, he checked the expressions on his friends' faces. And when they all seemed to be equally surprised, he asked,
Is that for real?
Elaine looked up and smiled.
Betsy is purring all right. She loves to be petted.
As Alex laid a hand on Betsy, he could feel life sizzling underneath the feathers. She was like a little baby, needing attention and affection, like we humans did. Maybe she wasn't able to think abstractly, but she definitely could feel pain and a wide range of other emotions. His heart went cold as he remembered the heinous sight of those poor creatures stacked in small cages on that egg farm. Yet, it wasn't only tragic for the hens, but for the ignorant humans who ate their embryos. The yolk and the egg white contained in some form or another all the suffering, terror, and ailments of hens' short, miserable lives. This negative energy was then passed to the people who consumed them, not to mention the adverse effects these cholesterol bombs had on their arteries. Hashim stared at the D-beaked hen, then the larger one, whose beak was still intact.
What happened to her?
Elaine frowned, though still petting the hen in her arms.
Well, Betsy was an egg-laying hen. Her beak was cut off with no anesthesia when she was just a little chick. It's like if you had your lips cut off and burned to stop the bleeding when you were a baby. This mutilation would leave the most sensitive nerve endings exposed for the rest of your life. You would feel an excruciating pain every time you ate, drank, or touched something with your lips.
Alex could feel how delicate the nerves were underneath the thin skin as he touched his lips with his fingers. The pain must be unbearable.
Why? Why would they do such a cruel thing?
Hashim asked.
To make more profit. They keep them in such horrible conditions that, in their distress, hens tend to peck each other to death.
It was hard for Alex to believe that such gentle and playful creatures could do something like that. But then he remembered the filth, the terror, and the death he had witnessed on the egg farm. After watching chicks jumping over a mother hen and pecking her feathers as if they were playing, Alex asked,
"Do they de-beak all the chicks?"
For the first time, Alex noticed the deep lines on Elaine's face. The smiley eyes had turned cold. The gentle grandmotherly demeanor was gone.
"Only the egg-laying ones," she responded. "The boy chicks are shredded alive in a meat grinder, or dumped in a garbage can until they starve or suffocate to death. In my opinion, you could consider them the lucky ones."
Hashim crossed his arms.
"But my mom buys only organic, free-range eggs."
"It's a marketing ploy,"
Elaine said and flinched.
"The hens that lay organic eggs still get their beaks chopped off, too. They still live all their lives without natural light, surrounded by metal walls with no straw, no wood to perch on, and hardly any space to spread their wings. Unfortunately, there's nothing natural in their surroundings other than death and suffering."
Bowing his head, Hashim crumpled under Elaine's scrutiny. He uncrossed his arms and let them hang on his side.
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Alex reached out to touch Hashim's shoulder.
"It's us. Humans. We're the monsters."
Hashim watched a piglet pushing a ball with her snout as her mother lay in the shade nearby. He had never seen a live pig before. Not that he had ever really wanted to. In his mind, pigs were the dirtiest animals anyway. Or that's what he had been raised to believe. However, that little piglet playing with the ball seemed to be perfectly clean. Still shaken by what he had learned about egg-laying hens, he tried to put his mind into other things, but to no avail. There were plenty of sayings by the Prophet that urged Muslims to treat animals well. A good deed done to an animal is like a good deed done to a human being, while an act of cruelty to an animal is as bad as cruelty to a human being. Of course, there are verses in the Quran about the importance of animal well-being, too. He didn't remember the exact words, but one verse compared animals to humans, explaining that they form communities like humans do. Another one said that animals are living creatures with feelings and connections to the larger spiritual and physical world, adding that all the believers must consider their lives worthwhile and cherished. After following the piglet's game for a while, Hashim stepped closer. The baby pig seemed to take notice of him and passed him the ball. At first, Hashim hesitated. According to his tradition, it was not considered a sin to touch a pig, but if he remembered right, afterwards he would have to take a shower. However, the piglet didn't care about religious doctrines and came over to sniff his feet. Kneeling down, Hashim reached out to pat the piglet. The skin was rough under his fingers. If his memory served him right, he had never touched an animal, at least willingly, so he couldn't compare the sensation to anything. All he knew was that this little cute thing was another living being. As the piglet dropped on her back, Hashim just stared at her, not knowing what to do. She gave a soft grunt as he laid his hand on her stomach. Soon the little piglet was writhing with pleasure from the belly rub, wavering her left front leg. Then her brothers woke up next to their mom and rushed to the scene. And now Hashim had 6 piglets, all craving for his attention. Some of them ran around him at high speed, squeaking in happiness. Hashim lifted the first one up and put his arms around her like she was a baby.
"Ah, you found a new friend," Alex said as he walked over.
As Hashim hugged her gently in his arms, she snuggled her snout deeper between his arm and ribcage. Breaking into a full beam, Hashim felt connected to the living universe in a way he had never done before.
"I think this would be a perfect place to make my coming out video,"
Hashim said after a while.
"It's now or never." "There's no next time,"
Hashim said, lifting the piglet and planting a kiss on her forehead. Miriam sat on a garden chair, ready to shoot, as Hashim was saying a silent prayer, his eyes half closed. Miriam was surprised how collected and calm he was, unlike Alex, who couldn't stand still. Hashim was doing what he needed to do, and what Miriam had encouraged him to do since he came out to his parents 9 months earlier.
"Psst, I'm not 100% sure that this is such a good idea,"
Alex whispered in her ear.
"There are all kinds of nut jobs out there. I'm afraid something bad could happen to him."
"Says the boy who just got fired at and chased through the woods last night,"
she shot back.
"Oops,"
Alex said and raised his eyebrows. Hashim seemed to have followed their brief exchange and looked rather amused. After a nod, he focused his eyes on the camera and said,
"For years, I carried a terrible guilt and shame. I tried to cure myself through prayers and devotion. On my 18th birthday, my mom told me she had arranged my engagement for the following day. However, I realized I couldn't go along with it because it would be torture towards me, hypocrisy towards God, and deceit towards my fiancé. But worst of all, my future children would be the ones to suffer the most. A lot of things went down that day. I fell out with my best friend, had my first joint and my first drink, went to a gay club and got rejected by my first crush. The night was such a roller coaster and made me emotionally so raw that I didn't have any strength to go on pretending to be something I was not. When I came home that night and told my mom I was gay and couldn't marry the girl she wanted, she got very upset and kicked me out of the house."
Wiping his nose, Hashim swallowed hard.
I don't know how I would have made it without my friends."
Feeling his pain, Miriam slumped in her seat, still holding her phone steady. Distressing memories came flooding back to her, including a terrible fight between her and Alex. It had been the worst night of her life. It was like they had been transported to a parallel universe ruled by Shaitan. She leaned back toward Alex, who stood right behind her. Not touching, but just feeling him close comforted her. Hashim wiped away tears from his eyes and took a couple of deep breaths before he continued.
"Yet my mom, my amazing mom, alhamdulillah, Allah is the most compassionate, the most merciful. After a week, she came around and forgave me. And now I feel I am closer to her than ever before. There's no changing the creation of God."
Miriam couldn't hold off her tears anymore,
and she could hear Alex sniffing behind her. She recalled how after a frantic search on the lakeshore, she and Alex had found Hashim drenched and shivering by the cliffs that warm early summer morning. It had been the worst night of her life, which had turned into the most meaningful one in the end. Amelia was frying eggs and plantains on two separate pans in the canteen. She had been surprised to find the right type of green bananas in the pantry, as well as spicy sausages. Adding some refried beans and strong coffee, she could make a hearty breakfast for her fellow workers before they started the day's work. As she was moving the plantain slices from the pan to a plate, she started coughing. It came with such a force that she forgot to cover her mouth. With water running down her eyes, she buried her face in the kitchen towel. "Where is your daughter?" Amelia raised her head and saw the lanky foreman standing in the doorway. He came over with a frown that soon melted as he spotted the fried plantain slices on the plate.
"I'm sorry, boss. She's not good today. Woman problems."
After grabbing a few slices, he said, "If she wants to get paid, she better come back to work."
"Yes, boss. Thank you, boss,"
Amelia said and bowed her head.
Thank you for listening to the Rise Up Trilogy podcast. For more information, go to my website, henrikvillenius.com.